Butchie, what would you say your housemate Lou would say is your most annoying habit?
I don't really have any. Maybe stabbing or lying. I say he'll say that at least, stabbing or lying.
Let's bring out Lou now, who has been in a soundproof booth. So Lou, you have no idea what Butchie said.
Nope, except I heard something about stabbing or lying, but I don't know the context.
Oh well, that's ruined. We were looking for Butchie's most annoying habit.
I wouldn't have answered that anyway. His most annoying habit is when we're leaving the house and I have the keys in my hand to lock the door and he's the last person out, he doesn't shut the door behind him. So I have to step back into the house and shut the door before locking it.
I don't do that.
You can put away the knife, Butchie. I don't even find it annoying. You do so much other good stuff that I don't care about your faults.
I care about your faults, but there's nothing I can do since you pay 100% of the rent.
I think we have the perfect balance in our relationship.
This ain't a relationship, pal. It's symbiosis.
How is it that you and I are together right now, friend? I won't question it. It's fate. Or maybe it's a novel that an interdimensional being is reading, and this part has just now come up in the plot. Hardy and I have a visit. We could be living in a higher being's novel. You're thinking, why isn't my life more interesting? And then you realize, hey, I'm person walking their bike by the bakery in some space god's book. Even if I were the main character, Gardewallo the clerk, there is no guarantee my experience would be better. And certainly it all ends on the same page. And then there's some blank pages for notes. So why not dwell among the characters at the periphery who are not being judged by the reader? Why subject yourself to judgment? I think if judgment is required, my consent is moot. As Pigmeat Markham said, here comes the judge. I don't know why I said that. And here does come the judge. Who is that that comes to judge me? What comes to judge me? Why, it is a giant, comprised of the bodies of all the people who I have lived with, people who have lived with me and before me, and even some who have lived after me, whose opinions and beliefs about me I give sway and influence, even though I oppose them and don't understand them. Who is in your head? You are a property owner. Your head is a house you've inherited. Now, maybe you don't live there all the time, but you have to go check on it, because if there's something that looks like a nice, comfortable little house sitting somewhere and it's not occupied, some creature is going to make it its home. And a lot of times, if there's empty space in your head, people in your life will come and live there. Dead people, live people, imaginary people, characters in novels, great gods out in space, ghosts. They get in there and they start writing books and things, and they start giving opinions, and they start speaking loudly. Some of them speak in their sleep. They have night terrors, a lot of these individuals who you invite into your head, your head home. And that's all up there, your cranial B&B. And they come live there. So I thought that we could go explore it together. Let's go take a look. Let's go walk around. What I do is I bring a couple vicious dogs and a gun. Not really. But you don't know who's going to be in there, whether it's going to be some friendly sort. Like Goldilocks. She breaks in a lot of times. Say, whose house is this? I'm just going to come on in. And she's not shot because bears don't have thumbs. And that's really the only reason. And they're out. So there's a couple reasons. But in many different universes, she perishes. But they didn't check either on their house. They should have been looking around. Who's giving opinions in my life? Who is yelling in my ear? Hardy, you're not doing the right thing. You're failing at something. You're not good enough. Look at how unattractive you are. To whom? I'm thinking about, who am I unattractive? Oh, it's somebody in my head. Look, let's go in there. Let's go in one of these rooms. I'm afraid. What if there's a strange person? Well, there will be something strange in that room, but we're going to have to go in. Let's go in that room. Okay, it's locked. Let's forget about it. We'll ignore it a couple more years. That's the thing, too. That's good. That's give us a nice excuse. but they're still shouting opinions, aren't they? They're still shoving things under the door. What's this note card say? It says, you are inadequate. I don't even know what that means. Inadequate what? Just generally? Who am I comparing myself to? Oh, look at you, Hardy. What have you done with your life? Well, I don't know how to answer that. Was there something specific? Because I was not given a little, I should have been given some sort of little book or something. I could write things down. Now, my mother had one. She had one going for a while. And it was quite inclusive. It started on the first day that I was born. And she included all the pertinent information. How, at the time, they weren't calling it height. They were calling it length. How long I am. Titter, titter. But that's how long I was in length because I was just laying down mostly. That was my, if I was vertical, it was because I was being held that way. But I was completely helpless. And so I depended on others. So really, their opinions did matter at that point because I was thinking, gosh, I don't know what it takes to get some, I'm calling it milk, but I would be glad to do that. I noticed that screaming works, so I'll just continue to scream. Also, I'll make my eyes look real big. But she put this in a book, and it would have Dale Hardy, day one. He's this big. This is what I remember. I remember there was a, when he came out in the world, there was a, some kind of odor. I think it was, the doctor said it was, that hell has these gases that are released. But I don't think that's right. It was an older hospital. I think it probably just had some sort of leak, some chemical thing that was going on. And that might have affected me. All through my elementary school career, my mother pasted things in this book. Pictures of me to keep track how I looked. Look at his skull growing. And it would. Oh, as the human skull grows, the face on it begins to distort and twist in all sorts of ways so that by the time you're 7, 8, 9 years old, you're thinking, what's happening to this child? Look at its face. If you were to speed that up, it would look like one of those claymation, really bad science fiction shows where the cheekbones are moving willy-nilly underneath the flesh, which, in the case of the science fiction effects, is a thin layer of latex. And there is no thin layer of latex between you and the outside world, friend. They all get in those windows that you open up in your soul as a wave, letting the world in. As trying to figure out how do I get milk. As you get older, milk is like a employment. Say, how am I going to get that I'm going to call it a bottle, but we know what I mean. I don't want to be crude. And I know it's human life and everything, but people be misunderstanding, and they will titter. So how do you get that bottle? I won't get that bottle. So maybe I'll cry for it. Maybe I'll flap my eyelids, but I got to be nice to those who are providing me with this sustenance. Oh, my goodness. And then you realize as you get older, you go, oh my gosh, I've been giving my allegiance to so many in exchange for spiritual milk. And a lot of the times it's misplaced. And I could get the milk elsewhere. The minute I found out that I could get milk at the convenience store, 7 and Holding, then I no longer needed any parents. No, I don't know. Is that true? I don't remember if that was a specific age. I did remember the age that I was at when I figured I could ride my bike to this convenience store and buy gum and get the wacky packages. Because there's, if you got the gum, then there's a sticker in there, wacky packages. And it was a parody sticker of different products. And these artists were saying, hey, who cares? I don't think Velveeta cheese is sacred. I'm going to say it's Valveeter cheese. And I would look at that and I'd say, that's so subversive. I'm so free. I'm riding my bike to the 7-Eleven and I'm getting this subversive art that's telling me I don't care about these things I'm supposed to care about. They're all nonsense. I mock them with my freedom. I'm not letting the cheese company in my head. Why would I let them do business in there? I have this space. Think of it. as a little building you have. There's a mid-century office building that you've inherited in a city, and it sits on a block, and there's nothing in it right now. Are you going to let a company come in there for free and set up their offices? What do they sell? Exactly. What do they smell? They poot flavored soup or something. I don't know, but it's something you don't agree with. And it's going to mess up and smell up the place. And even though you're a dog person, they've got dogs. But they're not your dog. I mean, there's other people's dogs sometimes. Oh, my word. I don't know whether they don't hear them or smell them. Your senses get inured, I guess, if you've got love for your own dog. I realize my dogs are hard. I love them so much. But I can see the horror on others' faces when they come over. So I know it's mainly the one dog. The beagle's all right. But the other dog, it's so genetically diverse that it's insane. I think it's inherited the insanity gene from all breeds. And that's cool, and it's also awful. It can leap to shoulders height. And it's a big dog, so people don't enjoy that. I think it's neat, but they don't. I don't think they like that because it hurts them and soils their clothes at the same time. So everybody loves a blouse full of mud and bloody scratches on their legs and chest, don't they, when they come over? So why don't we put one of these dogs in our head? Now, I know what you're saying. You're saying, Are you saying I don't need to be judged, that nobody needs to live in this building? Oh, you can occupy the building. We're going to get to that. But we got to clean it out first, all those who aren't paying rent. If something's going to live in your head, it has to pay some rent. Or it has to have some reason to live there. At least it needs to be a caretaker. They used to, in Victorian times, hire people to live in little cottages on the land of wealthy estate owners. They'd have these little cottages, quaint cottages, that would look as if they were occupied by a gnome. Or a they used to spell it genome, but then when that became an actual scientific thing, they said, we should now make it silent. The silent G. But these genomes would live, these little houses looked like they'd have a gnome in them, so they'd hire some old elderly man with a beard, say, live there and be a caretaker. You can have the house for free, and you live around here. Just clip the roses and maybe wear a big pointy felt hat and dance around in boots that you also made of cloth. I know they're not practical. Please do this for us. And then when I have friends over and we take walks, I'll say, look at my wonderful gardens. Look at that cottage as if it is inhabited by a gnome. What's this I see? Leaping from tree to tree? An actual gnome is thee. Come, be with me. Bring us peach and plum from your garden, that we may taste these fruits of delight that you offer us tonight in this garden of the genome. Assembled here are all my friends. They've come to view the land. I have a house that's awfully nice. It's large and marble and grand. I have two hands. I have a face. I have some ears as well. At night, I journey up in space and plunge deep down into hell. And when I'm there, I see some things, and I'll tell you all about them. I have some butterflies, and they are dead. I think that I shall mount them. I was going to say about horses, but I don't know about mounting horses. It might hurt them, and I don't have pins that big. But there's other things I suppose I could mount. If my mother's book extended to my whole life, then I've blown it, because at some point she gave up on me, I'd say around high school, and the book suddenly ends, and there is no scrapbook after that, so I don't know what's expected of me, and I didn't after that point. And if I had had that book, I don't know how I would have filled it in, and I don't know how I'd fill it in now. I have clipped out pieces out of the paper every time that they mention me. Sometimes it's like just a property sale. But I still clip it out to say, well, hey, you never know. And in the future, when your descendants, if you should have any, are looking for you, they go through these papers and they go, look at this. Gramps bought a piece of land by mistake at an auction in 2000 and blah, blah, blah. Or owned this house for a while. That's fascinating. We learned so much about our ancestors through paperwork. We don't, do we? Let's get back to inspecting this property. A lot of times you don't know who's in your head, and you have to be a bit of a detective. And a detective should have a couple things. White powder, graphite, scotch tape, that is for taking fingerprints, and a fingerprint card. That is for lifting fingerprints off the scene of a crime. Another thing they should have is a baggie, rubber gloves, face mask, goggles, and that is for picking up scat, because you can tell what's been there by what droppings it leaves. And a lot of times you walk into a room in your head and you say, someone's been here. I don't know whether it's a parent or an ancestor. I don't know who is telling me that I'm not living my life correctly, or that I'm seeing things wrong, or that I don't deserve to be loved, or I don't deserve to love myself. I don't know where it's coming from, but I see their poop. I see that they've also, there's empty bags of thing. Who is this? Look, is it Kleenex, wadded up Kleenex? Who's living here? Oh, some sad individual. That's because they're living there without me knowing about it. So they're not getting everything they need. So it's not even the real individual that's judging me. It's some emaciated, horrible, neglected, poor soul that's been trapped in a room in my head that is now telling me who I am. Oh, get out of there. Let's get it out. How do you chase them out? A lot of times what malls will do, if they don't want teens to hang out outside the movie theater or something, is play music that they think that teens find so offensive, so unable to be cool around, that it will chase them off like a high-pitched frequency blasted from a place that does not want pigeons to roost there. And they'll play this music, and I've gone by and I'd say, oh my gosh, what are they playing? This is fantastic. Why is the mall playing this great song? And somebody will say to me, "That's, you're an idiot. They're doing that to chase off teens." I go, Rosemary Clooney is chasing off teens? Teens love Rosemary Clooney. And they go, no, now teens. Oh, okay, I don't know. Really? That's so funny. And that gets rid of them, does it? Yes. Let us use this strategy in our heads, perhaps. Let's play something in there. A lot of people will use that. Say, I put on headphones and I put on music that inspires me, music that brings me to somewhere else, that has some message like, hey, go out and do that thing you do. Throw some paint on the man. Or I don't know what it's like, but it's like, yeah, get you fired up, you know. Let's fly into space and use our powers to blow up things now. Wow, right? It gets you all pumped up, and it chases out some of those things in your head that are like, is that screaming Mimi on your lapel pin? Get that off of there. Like the dad in the video. And you say, yeah, this aggression will not stand anymore, you say to the authority in your head, and you become the authority. And then you do it. Then maybe you could live there. Live a little while in your head. Don't live too much in your head. Some of it you have to live outside of it, because you get in there and you start, time flies and you forget you've been in there, and you walk out and you go, oh, shoot, how long have I been sitting at this desk at work? I'm sorry, this is so embarrassing, sir. Who, remind me who you are. Because I have been dreaming. I have been lost in my own world in my head. I go these places. It's magnificent. I feel unchained. I feel free. I feel outside of any prison. I feel as if I'm flying. It feels like nobody can bring me down. So, this is one of the guest bedrooms. It looks occupied. Ah, yes, it is. So someone is living here? Well, nowadays, most mind palaces come with a permanent online commenter resident
who lives there and leaves nasty notes about things. But if this is going to be my house, why would I want a hostile tenant living there? Are you saying tenant or tenet? Look, I don't want this guy, and I know it's a guy, living here and critiquing everything I do, regardless of whether it deserves it or not. Can he be evicted? Well, we could try the music thing.
You make me feel so young. You make me feel as though spring has sprung. And every time I see you grin, I'm such a happy individual. Oh, does that work? Has he left? I think it's empty now. I think we're alone now, except for me. I'm going to have my friends live here. People can live in this house of yours. The rooms, there's so many of them. You can live in some of them. Invite others to live there. So I don't want critical voices. Now, some you may need. Let's say that you have a habit of running down the street without your pants on. And I may say to you, you know what would be helpful is having maybe a little voice in your head that says, hey, slow down there, partner, pants on. Maybe dress him like a little security guard. He just sits at a desk all day drinking coffee. He doesn't have to do much. He's guarding something that's not tremendously desirable, your dignity. But then every once in a while, somebody might come for it, and he's like, don't touch that. Don't, you know, we'd say if he was at a museum, don't touch that. But he'd say, pants back on, partner. And you go, thanks. Thanks for the tip. You can have your friends living in there, too, saying, oh, you're all right. You're okay. Or some of them saying, hey, maybe you're being a little too easy on yourself here. Let's toughen up and power through this. Things like that that you can only really say to yourself, or if a friend is saying it to you, they have to be an imaginary friend in your head, or your real friend made into an imaginary figure, because sometimes it's really hard to take criticism from others, especially if it's correct. Oh, there's nothing worse than being corrected when it's correct. So sometimes those voices in your head, you know, they have to be right, so you have to love, they have to love, trust, relationship with them. Wanted roommates for my head, must be able to get along, must be able to drink the same type of coffee, or no coffee at all. Maybe that's it. Maybe if we both drank the same type of coffee, it would be a gone in the morning. Maybe we need to be complementary instead of identical or something like that. Maybe I need others in my head whose voices complement my own. If I was putting together a barbershop quartet, hey, listen to this irony. I probably wouldn't call a barber, but I would call those who have different range voices than my own. Now, how did this start? There was a barbershop, four barbers sitting in chairs, and you'd go in, and one of them go, I'm free. And the other would go, I'm free. And the third one would go, I'm free, like that. And they'd say it at the same time. And you'd walk in, you go, my God, that's a chord. That's a chord. It's just four octaves, but it's a chord. Sometimes they would sing. There was one barber, it wasn't a barber, it was somebody they hired to do nails, and they would sing only thirds. So that was nice. When they were gone, I feel like a lot of their haircutting lost nuance. And you need that. You need different harmonies. You need different relationships, different intervals. We need different voices in our heads. Who are we going to have in there? I've invited some to come live with me. You know that. You know that. Say, who is Butchie? Who is Lou? Well, I used to have some voices in my head, and sometimes they were like childhood playmates, or people didn't even really love me. And for some reason, I was supporting them, giving them room and board. I would even provide one of those little racks that you put your suitcase on and open it on, so you don't have to put the suitcase on the bed. Are you following me? It opens up. It's got little straps like that, almost like it's a patio chair, but it's for your suitcase. I offered them that, and they didn't even love me. And I let them in, and they lived there for a while. And then I thought, Butchie could be living here. Now, he's not so great, but he's great for slapping me in the face and going like, snap out of it. And I need that sometimes. I need to tell that to myself. I also need someone to say, hey, maybe today is a me day. And then I know that that person has probably one of those calendars where every day says me on it. So I don't want to listen to them too much. But every once in a while, yeah, I'm gonna listen to Lou. But Lou actually works hard. He doesn't always encourage me to take a me day. But he does say, love yourself. What's wrong with that? That's not right. Is that radical? It's radical in that there would be those who would like to take your love from you and sell it back to you, just the way they do water. They would like to take that ability that you have to feel like everything's okay, to feel joy, to feel self-love, to take it away from you and then to met it out to you as you do things for them. So you only get to feel good about yourself when you're doing something for them. Ooh, don't give that away. Oh, don't give that away. The world will beat you down. Oh, and it can be painful and all. You need that place inside yourself. You need to be the one who controls your soul. You need to be a revolution inside of you. Oh, there will be worldwide revolutions and people will stand up for their rights. But are you standing up inside too? You got to do that because at that day of reckoning, when you're alone there, when something finally takes you, it's just going to be you and your thoughts. So what are you going to do then? What are you going to do now when you go to sleep and close your eyes? Oh, have that be a place that can be refuge at least, because the outside world is beyond your control and ken. Ken? Like knowledge. Oh, see, Hardy, when you say that, my name is Ken, and I'll go, what? Because you say, that's not outside my ken, and I'll just hear, about Ken? I should do that. I should do maybe the next 10 minutes just yell given names. And say, well, I swear someone just said my name. I would actually be forced to do to make them as diverse as possible, and that would slow me down, because it'd be easy for me to just rattle off the names of people I went to elementary school with. But now my adult relationships, I know people from all over the place, so I'd want them all represented, and I'd end up just listing names of people I know, and I don't want to do that to them. And they'd say, Hardy, why did you say my name on the radio? Because I was talking about who's living in your head. And they'd say, am I living in your head? And you'd go, yeah, you are. You're in the spa. And they'll go, please, can I not be there? That's another thing. Are we living in the heads of others? We probably are. Keep that in mind, that the you in someone else's head might not be the real you. So when you hear stories of things you did walking around that house, doing things in someone else's mind palace, doing things in someone else's vacation head rental, and their skull B&B, it might not have been literal you, but the you that they created and put in their head for some inexplicable reason. I don't know whether it's beneficial for them. They trust you. They like you. They look up to you. Or maybe they're threatened by you and you're in there saying things like, you're not as good at radio as I am. Oh, the Hardy in your head. Oh, you can't do it. Oh, I hope that's not me. I know that I'm probably in some of your heads going, come on, you're all right. It's all right. And that's good. I'd love to be that. I'd love to go on there and live there. I'll be quiet most of the time. I just read. What do? I read. I sleep. I go for a walk, so I might not even be in there a lot of times, unless... This is what I don't understand. So if your head is a house, are the grounds also in there? So if I went for a walk, would I still be technically inside your head, or is just the house your head? Am I walking around on your shoulders? Like the angel and the devil competing for your... They're both in an ear is the problem. Now, that was my brother-in-law. He's deaf in one ear. So I don't know if he's deaf in his angel ear or his devil ear. And I wonder about that sometimes. I go, I know only one voice is talking to him. You wonder which one. I think this is the non-dairy creamer. I think I'll give it a try. What's in there, head? What do you got in there? I'll do that. This is my thing. This is why radio is dangerous for me. I'm inviting you over to my house. And I'm saying, come on in. The place is a mess. Do you want to explore my storage space with me? And you say, Hardy, that sounds like fun. And then I say, great. Now, I don't know everything that's in there. And then what happens is the theme music plays. Oh, great. The door opens up, and
out of that closet is vomited all these things that I've shoved in there over the years. And I don't know what's in there. And we try to walk in there and there are things that have fallen out that might be embarrassing. This is what happens when I speak to you. I don't know what's in there fully. We're going to discover it together. And that takes a lot of bravery, I think, on my part, because the things that we discovered together might be embarrassing a little bit to me. Why am I still walking around with that? You must think me weak. You must think me immature. Be walking around with some sort of self-doubt that I've held on to since elementary school. Now, I do have a couple items that I have kept since elementary school. Both of them are KTEL compilation albums. One of them, and if you know me and you've been in my closet before, you know this. One of them is because of the Ohio Players song Funky Worm. Now, I don't know if this is just, is it on an album? I don't want to know. But it's on my compilation album of like Fun Rock or something. I think it's called Fun Rock. It might be another one. I've got a couple different ones. But Funky Worm is on there. I think it's like a Dr. Dre sample, too. And that song is very important to me, and I've carried it around since elementary school. But there's a lot of other things that I have not. You know, some little memories. Here's a strange memory. When I was in the fourth grade, we put on a play. And the play we did was Laugh-In. Now, I know this is not appropriate for children. I don't think we did a very sophisticated version of it. But I don't know why my elementary school was doing Laugh-In. I'm trying to think why. But I remember doing that. And it even occurred to me at the time, I'm probably never going to forget this. And I did most of it, I forgot, actually. But the fact that we did it at all has really resonated with me. I wonder if kids did things like that. Say, yes, Hardy, my elementary school did All in the Family. That's TV was so influential when I was young. It was amazing. Things would be the headlines. I know this is hard today to understand, but you would get the New York Times and the headline would be about what happened on the Bob Newhart show the night before. I'm not even kidding. I'm not kidding. The psychologist, Jerry, what's his name, went on to direct movies. This is true. Marcia, bless her heart, who was the receptionist, was then the voice of the teacher on The Simpsons. Now, how did this happen? This happened because there was a collective consciousness, and that collective consciousness was divided into three networks plus public broadcasting. And then we all dug into that we would all furnish our homes. Here's a good analogy. Let's say we all had homes, but there was one shop to get the furniture. And so you had three choices, like, you know, colonial, hippie, Euro hippie, and rustic. And so your home was either that. It either looked like something like it was a cabin or a craftsman. Or it looked like when Major Healy or something and Jeannie hired a hippie interior designer to redo Major Nelson's house. It could look like that. Or it could look like colonial times. Like growing up, we had a colonial era TV console that was made. It was lovely. It was made by Aaron Burr. What's the one? There's some name of furniture that's also a colonial. Larry David. And it was made by these Aaron Copeland. I don't know. One of those. Chippendale. But it was a television set. Now, you're saying, I don't think they got many shows back in colonial times besides Milton Berle or whatever. No. They didn't, but they knew that someday they would, and so they would make these beautiful cabinets for it. Just like now we have, I was going over to a friend's house, and I said, your teleporter pad is beautiful. What is that? And they said, it's all cedar. I mean, it's gorgeous. I said, well, it's extinct Bermuda cedar. It was harvested out of
there was these homes, cottages in Bermuda they tore down. I think they might have been on Michael Douglas's property. And we brought the cedar over, and I've made my transporter pad out of it. And I'm saying, that's so great. Now, I know we don't have the technology yet, so this isn't functioning, but it's raring to go. They said, yes. And I said, this is a lot like those colonial TV sets. And they said, exactly. Because sometimes when you're a visionary, it can seem like kitsch. But it's not, you know? It's that you're just seeing into the future. And you can do that if, in your mind palace, you take down some walls, as long as they're not load-bearing. As long as you don't remove a load-bearing wall from your internal landscape, your internal housescape, housequake, then you will have more room, as if it were some sort of sophisticated loft. And then you'll see all aspects. You'll see everyone who's living there. They'll have to come down to breakfast every morning, and you can keep account of who's there so that you don't get strangers or animals or things living in there, ghosts living in the recesses of your beautiful property, crawling around in that closet. What's in there? You get afraid to open it. When you open it, yes, there is a tiny little dusty demon in there, but confronting it is better than letting it scare you to death, letting it ruin everything. Let's just open the door and get it out of there. Maybe it'll run out the window or fly out the window. Or what if it does crawl up your legs? So what? That's terrifying. But it's better to confront it and deal with it. Let's get it out. Let's face these things together. We'll go in there together. It won't be so bad. I've done that. Someone said to me, I brought a property sight unseen, and apparently the lady who lived there is still... I go, oh, I don't know if I can help you clean that out. And I go, come on, man. Help me clean this property out. It won't be, we'll just get some bleach and bags and it'll be like John Wick. I go, no, I don't, I love you, but I don't want to go into some place like that. But I would, though. I would, though, because I want you to be able to clean it out, because I want you to experience what it's like to have a beautiful place like that without, you know, strange things live in there. Voices that hurt you. Don't want you to hurt yourself, friend. Oh, I don't. And I don't want you to hurt me. That's my... I'm sorry. I just thought I'd sneak that in there. Also not me. So I think the better... If you're consistently full of love and forgiveness for yourself, so that's what scares me. When people doubt themselves and have this, have a lot of self-loathing, I think, well, gosh, they probably... You know, usually people are better to themselves than others, so their loathing for me must be twice that or something. That's what people might assume. They go, no, I love others more than me. How can that be? Come on, I think you're seeing yourself wrong or something. And even if you're not, here's to all the awful people. I got a little secret for you. It all ends the same. It's okay. You can lighten up on yourself. That'll help. I know we all want everyone to be judged and held accountable. And we make up stories about how, yes, they all ultimately will step before a judge and everybody's going to go to jail and then everybody else is going to get a musical instrument and a place to loiter. That's the understanding. I don't know if that's true. All I know is what's happening right now. And I do know the difference between pain and pleasure, between joy and pain. Pump it up like sunshine and rain. I do know the difference. But sometimes it rains and sunshines at the same time, does it not? How do I know the difference then? Oh, I open my eyes and I let both the rain and the sunshine in. And the rain, it stings my eyes a little bit, but I can see through it. But the sunshine blinds me. I don't know where what I'm trying to get you to believe there. Analogies are misleading. Sometimes you can't be taken to their logical consequences because... You think, well, I don't know what that means, Hardy. If I have too much joy, then my eyeballs are going to burn away. I don't know. I guess so. I don't know. I don't know that I've ever had too much joy. But I'll let you know. Is that like looking directly into the sun? I don't really know, because while I'm having joy, I'm wearing sunglasses because they make me feel cool. It's so cool not to have visible eyes. I'm like a scary bug. That's what I want you to believe. No, I don't want you to be scared of me. Do I? I don't know if I do or not. I don't know. Everyone's Frankenstein's monster. And they encountered that little child, and they said, do I want him to be scared? Because being scary is part of my self-identity, but at the other time, I'm lonely. So I would like to be loved and feared at the same time. How could I go about doing that? You should start a business. The love won't be genuine, but there you go. You'll have what you want. Have power over others, and then you'll... Who wants that? Not me. I don't want to be in charge of a business. I can't even imagine what that would be like. I do wake up at night sometimes thinking, oh, God, thank you, Lord, for not having me be a plane pilot or a surgeon. Should I wake up tomorrow morning not refreshed, there will be very few consequences. You know, not a lot of people will suffer because I didn't get a good night's sleep or I stayed up eating ice cream and now I've been on the toilet all night or something. I can't imagine, you know, hurting others because of my... something I've done like that. Irresponsible. Oh, I'm so sorry. But if I was the type of person that was, you know, super disciplined, I'd be happy to be the one that flew you every day. Oh, that'd be lovely. But no, I'm not the one. I shouldn't be. What sort of responsibility can you handle, Hardy? I could be, I can take your order. I wouldn't ever put anything in your food. I can do that. I'm good at cleaning. I can manage your account. I don't know what kind of account that is. I don't know, as long as it doesn't mean numbers. I just be a person. I can be a liaison. I can consult if it is very vague and nebulous, the consultation. It's not specific consultation. I would like to consult for something very, very general. For instance, Hardy, I don't know, a decision. That's not very specific. Can you be more specific? No, I can't, because then that would betray my ignorance. I don't want to do that. If I had to talk in specifics instead of vague generalities or metaphors, then you would see, oh, gosh, I think you're very imparting very much information to me, are you, sir? When you're in the car and a beautiful love song comes on that you like, and you listen to those words. Sometimes they are very simplistic. Sometimes the chords, sometimes the intervals of things you've heard countless times before in other love songs. The words themselves are not very original, are they? And yet, combined the way they are and coming at the time they are, the sound is soothing to you. It does something. It transcends the parts. It becomes something bigger than the whole, a gestalt. Do you want to say that again? No, I don't want to say it again. I do and I don't want to say it again. What? That word, the G word. But it does mean all-encompassing, like a worldview. Right? What are you speaking to me about, Hardy? That's the whole point. I don't want to speak to you about anything. I want to speak to you about aboutness. I want to speak to you about feelings. I want to speak to you about experience of being alive, of the confusion, of the anger, of the inconsistency, of the absurdity of things that happen, of our inability to make sense of it as much as we try, at the persistent grasping that we do, and how elusive the thing that we're grabbing is because we don't know what it is. It's like using a claw machine and the whole box is just clouds. And am I just grabbing at clouds? I don't even know what's in there. Do I have it? Did I lose it before it got? I don't even know. I don't know what I want. I don't know what it is. And I don't know if I'm making any progress. I just keep putting that claw back into the cloud box. And I don't mind doing it with you. And I don't mind not saying anything to you. And I know that the sounds of things are as important as the meaning they convey. And that sometimes sounds can convey meaning that they don't actually contain. Do you understand? Like a recipe, or like you buy some flour, you're going to go home and make bread, aren't you? Yeah, because you have things to add to it. Here it's just flour. Here it's just a recipe. Cup of flour, cup of sugar, you put it all together. But it's essentially, I'm giving you nothing. I'm giving you clouds. I want to give you an opportunity. I want to give you an experience. Come use the claw cloud machine. Sounds sort of fun, Hardy. Oh, it is. It is. Sometimes you don't have to know what's going on. Please describe, if I do listen to, so I've been listening to a lot of podcasts. All right. And one of them is about how to make pottery and then also what to put on it. So it's a cooking show, craft show. All right. And then also it's about twirling the plate after you've eaten it. So you make it, you eat off of it, and then you try to like twirl it. I don't know if you saw variety shows in the 60s and 70s. Yeah. Okay. I get you. So I'm watching those kind of things. And then you mentioned Hardy White to me. Yeah. And I was just wondering what I would be listening to. What would I expect if I were to listen to it? Oh, all right. Well, I'll just, it's a fellas talking. Uh-huh. And you know how the one you're listening to, it tells you how to make a plate and then how to put something on it and then what to do with it when it's empty. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't do that. That's about it. But everything else, if you do nothing, you can do everything. That's the way I look at it. What is a cloud? If you look at a cloud, I've looked at clouds from both sides now. All right? And so now I've made a three-dimensional cloud model. But even when you do that, you see shapes, don't you? Because a cloud itself is nothing. It's just cloud's blob. A cloud itself is nothing. When you look at it, your mind constructs something based on stuff you've seen, desire. You don't know. It makes associations. It creates sense out of nonsense, even though it makes very little sense to have an elephant in the sky, less sense than just a blob of water vapor, but there it is. There it is in the sky, an elephant now I've made. I didn't know what it was, so I've just created something. And that does give me joy. I don't care if it's accurate. And the elephant will fade, and it will morph into something as well. But for right now, I have two choices. I can be terrified by the fact that I know nothing, or I can live in a world where there are elephants in the sky.
That's pretty good, Hardy. We're going to need you to do 13 more minutes.
13. All right. Well, that felt like a natural place to stop.
No. So keep going.
No, I know to keep going. I've been doing this. Let me tell you something. I've been doing this a long time.
Longer even now since I've been listening to you.
Almost an hour longer than when we started. And I have been doing it a long time, and I've been saying a lot of things to people, and I don't always see them, and I can't always see them, and I don't ever see them, actually. I got to confess that to you. I can't see you. But I've seen people, and I have a heart, and it's my way of, I can use it to sort of imagine someone. I have a holodeck. And you're in it. It's kind of you. Who is it? Somebody's curious. Somebody with an imagination. Somebody with troubles. Somebody who sees some of their faults, but other faults are unknown to them. Somebody who is both wise and foolish at the same time. That's who I believe is out there. Is that you? Is that you? Someone who's both a success and a failure, depending on what kind of day you catch them on. Somebody who's beautiful and homely at the same time. Is that you? That's me. Oh, I love it. I love all the contradictions. I love being confused. And I wouldn't if I were completely alone, but I know that I am not. You are with me, my friend. And that is enough to keep me going. I know that I'm going to see you at the end of the day, and I'm going to bring you all my silly stories. So if I do have something humiliating or terrifying happen to me, I know that when I relay it to you, it's going to be able to fall apart and turn into all its little comic characters. All the things that I think are villains are going to turn into marionette puppets, and I'm going to tell you the story, and they're going to be stripped of all their power, and they are not going to have power over me anymore, and we are going to laugh together at all these troubles we are in, and those who oppress us are going to be baffled by our joy. How can you be joyful? I know that you are in pain. You are nobody. You are a nobody. And we laugh and we go, ha ha, if we are nobodies, then how do you hear our laughter?
Pretty good, Hardy. We're going to need 10 more minutes.
10 more minutes. No, I know that. I know that. I know that I didn't. That wasn't an ending. There can be things that seem like endings. Did you ever go, when you go to see a concert, mainly a classical symphony or something, there's times where you think, surely this must be where you clap. And, you know, that if there's anything after that fantastic thing that just happened, because they were signaling, you know, this is gonna be big. And you're like, yes, no, that's not where you clap. There's gonna be other big things. So, whoa there, partner. Do you need things cleared out for you? Do you still have those things in your head? Do you want me to sing them out? I can sing them out. Some people have said, oh, your singing drives people away. Does it? Drives people away, like takes them out into the country and they could just forget their troubles, that kind of thing, where we get in my old hot rod and we just go down on a lonesome road. That kind of drives them away. I might have told this story, but I got to tell it again because it's so funny. To me, it's funny, perhaps to no one else. I must point that out. But it's just, it was one of those lovely moments. I was walking down the street in Athens, Georgia, and it was at night, at weekend party night, and they've got those railings like, I know I told, I'll just tell it again. And there was somebody sitting at a table drinking or something, and there was a street guy with a guitar leaning over. And as I'm passing, all I heard was the street guy with the guitar say to the people, the one guy at the table, shouldn't I drive your friends away? Like that. And yes, it was in that kind of, what do you call, not gravel, B.O. Plenty kind of voice, I imagine it, right? 60s menacing hillbilly voice. And it was amazing to me because he was, I think maybe the guy said no or anything, but clearly what had just happened is this guy had, with his guitar playing, driven the person's friends away. And I guess that's not what he was trying to do. But I loved his attitude because it was like, well, there you go. So be it. Did I drive your friends away? Why aren't you driven away? I think that's what he was really asking. Why haven't I driven you away? Have I not succeeded? Maybe I've failed and succeeded at the same time. Because if I was good at driving people away, you'd all be gone. So if I feel like this is just right in the middle, I'm not... Oh, welcome to being an entertainer. So I'm good enough to drive, you know, my point was to drive people away, I'd still only be half successful. I'm good at that. So it's tough. Because when you're not, this has happened to me where you don't suck enough to be outsider. You go, oh, no, really? You go, yeah, your stuff just sounds like you're trying too hard. Oh, I want to be quirky outsider. Nope. Oh, just missed it by a little. Okay, what about being sophisticated? And no, you're not that either. No, you're just right in this beautiful, gooey middle where most people play music are. Oh, darn it. Funny, because it does give me joy. Keep on doing it. That's all right. Oh, the things that give her joy are fine. And, you know, it's like beautiful people. So we wish somebody say, this person is so beautiful. I wonder if they are objectively. It doesn't matter. I believe it was, is it the book, Are You My Mother? There's one book like that where the child or the bird or something is saying, my mother is the most beautiful person in the world. That's how I know who she is. And other people are going, I've seen your mom and no. But to this little child, their mother was the absolute pinnacle of beauty to them, because it does matter. It is in the eye of the beholder, for sure, absolutely. So yes, you know, your beauty is just waiting for somebody to behold it, and the best beholder of that, I think, is you. There's nothing better than that, than saying, gosh, you know what, I'm not going to let anybody know that I'm going to go privately over here and feel good about myself. So I'm going to go over here and not be full of self-loathing. Because what if I didn't have to? What if I was okay? What if it was, you know, what if a lot of the things that I thought were my responsibility are just like come with being alive? Right? Oh, my friends. I love you. Don't let me go a day without saying that in case something happens. Even if I'm wrong, gosh, I'd like that to be the case. So I'll just keep living in the reality that I want. I want to live in a world where people are experimental with their front lawns. It's only the very eccentric right now. And so, but people, if people cared about things like that, instead of feeling pressured, a lot of people mow their lawn because of outside pressure. But what if you did things because you wanted to do them? That'd be amazing. Say, well, I don't feel like I'm creative enough. Oh, the art world needs more barely creative people. I think we have too many visionaries. We need people to just make things that are more ordinary. If that's all right, if you don't mind doing that. Yes, I just want to be in the game. See more things like this, my friend. See more things like this. Do you play softball on the weekends? No, that doesn't sound like me. Okay, but you know some people do. Yes. And there are some people that are professional baseball players. Yes. There you go. You know, they're both playing a game. And they're both playing at their level. And they're both experiencing joy. And then they both drop dead. Now, whose corpse is a better baseball player? All right? Edna LeMay or Joe DiMaggio? She's from, I used to work with, dead, played softball with her. She had just as much fun. And you know what? Joe DiMaggio didn't ever bring chips or anything to practice. Did he? Did he ever bring cupcakes? Say, I made too many cupcakes for my grandson's birthday party, so I brought the rest of them to softball. Joe didn't do that, I don't think. He'd say, oh, I got all these coffee makers. And he'd say, what kind of filters do they take, Joe? Because you know what? They don't take those flat basket filters anymore. These are worthless to me. Where am I going to get the flat basket filters? And he's like, you could still get them at the grocery store. And I said, can I, Joe? Can I? Because I remember last time I was in here and there was another baseball player. I don't know who it was. Wade Boggs or one saying, French, get a French press. I don't have time for that. Every time an athlete comes in here telling me different appliances I got to purchase. George Foreman and his grill. George Foreman said, oh, we got to get this grill and everything. Muhammad Ali is like, make popcorn for my popcorn popper. I don't know that he might not have done that, but a lot of them did. A lot of different... Pele had that omelet maker, if I remember correctly. And a hairdresser next to me, when I was getting my wig styled, she was talking about the air fryer. So everybody says she wasn't selling it, I don't think. I don't think she was selling it. I think she was using it to sterilize combs. That might not be. Oh, I wonder. Here's the... Never mind. It was a Puff Daddy joke. I'll make it later. I'll make it later. I will make it at a party. I don't know. It probably won't go over very well. Oh, my friends. You're so dear hearts that we're on the radio like this. So your show's so old-fashioned. No, it's not. They never did anything like this. Believe me. They had no time for it. There were other people with things that had stuff to go on. This is not old-fashioned. Oh, no. This is the new era. So there seems like there's... endless. There must be so many opportunities to speak to people that they're just giving away to anybody. I know. It's remarkable, right? But, oh, bless us, though. I think it's wonderful, though, to access to so many things. It's just like the first time an international grocery store comes to your town. And you go in there and they go, I don't know what Hardy White is. It's in this little packet, but I am fascinated. I'm going to take it home. Oh, it smells good. It smells like, it's not. It's an unfamiliar smell. But it's pleasant, but repulsive. Because it's unfamiliar. Oh, try new things. Let your mind stretch out there before you. And always be looking for miracles. This is Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU.org. WMFU, Mount Hope. 91.9 in New York City, New York, and Rockland County, New York, and online at WFMU.org worldwide. Thank you so much for visiting with me, and I will see you again next week. Butchie, what would you say?
I was standing Jesus, the one who will pardon your sin. Step number two, you got to love your neighbor as you love yourself. And step number three, you got to be baptized and washed in the blood of the Lamb. And when it's all over, you'll go. To feel the love of the Lord all over me. Every time I feel like this, it makes my mind run back to a cottage that's a long ways from here. I never will forget one Friday morning we gathered around the family altar. And as I can remember it, the music I heard sounded like this.
Fingers Crossroads Gospel Broadcast, everybody. If indeed there was a doubt, don't be a doubting Thomas for the next hour. Or right here, this here minute. Harps of the coast will come looking for you. Move on up a little higher, is what they were just singing. A little Laval record label, Harps of the Coast.